I'd like now to focus on a very conscious policy around distinctiveness based on the greening of a city. One of the incredibly striking things about Singapore, as opposed to other big Asian cities, is the foliage here, the vegetation. Right from Changi, the airport, into the centre of the business district, it's green, green, green. Big spreading poinciana trees, figs, no gums that I could see, but loads of underplanting as well of orchids and ginger plants and vinca and cabbage tree palm groups. And then if you look up, you don't see your classic vertical garden craze, but you see groups of palms and ornamentals placed in what are really lodges on, say, the 10th and the 16th stories of a high-rise building. And then there's this newest piece of Singapore innovation, super trees, out here at this new feature, the Marina Bay Sands, once a swamp, dotted with real trees, but also these amazing steel structures, which look Triffid-like, which ate the trunk and the canopy of a big tree, which has become such a tourist attraction, and many thousands of Australians have discovered it. The point is, as I think we're about to discover from a local historian, none of this was accidental, and really horticulture itself was quite secondary to the main aim. So let's discover some more. So we've come across town to the Marina Bay Sands Hotel, where we're waiting now to meet Tim Auger. He's a Brit. He's been living here for about 20 years, and he's written several books about Singapore, including Living in a Garden, The Greening of Singapore. It was brought out to commemorate 50 years since the late Prime Minister Lee Kuan Yew started this whole initiative. So we're going up the 56 floors now in the lift of this rather space-agey building, I must say, for a true, I'm told, incomparable bird's eye view.
This is Gardens by the Bay, which is a recent development, and it's one of the two biggest gardens of Singapore. The other one is the Singapore Botanic Gardens. And really, the two are two different kinds of garden. This one is much more of an attraction, with plants from all around the world. It doesn't claim to be particularly Singaporean. It's got flora from all over the place, and the two enormous glasshouses represent habitats globally. And what's remarkable about the whole thing is it's on reclaimed land.
So all of this that we're looking at, which is quite breathtaking, this is all reclaimed land, Tim?
All reclaimed land. And as you look from the Gardens by the Bay round to the left, you see the Marina Channel and the barrage in the distance across the mouth of the channel, which was opened quite recently and created what is now a freshwater reservoir. So if you had come to Singapore 10 years ago, you would have found that the sea came all the way into the old waterfront at Collyer Quay. Gosh. It doesn't anymore. The sea comes to the barrage, which is at the mouth of the Marina Channel, and everything within that is now a freshwater reservoir.
And what's the idea of that? Is there a particular purpose?
Well, Singapore has always had a water shortage. It has a lot of rain, but it doesn't have the capacity to retain a lot of water. Okay. That's partly because it's very small, and it's partly a geological question.
And of course, when you come up here to this amazing 56th floor, you look out over the bay, and you look, in a way, at the original Singapore port, don't you? So there's sort of, I don't know, there must be 40 vessels of 50?
Hundreds, literally hundreds.
All dotted around, which is what it was, wasn't it?
It was always an entrepot port. And in the old days, as we'll see when we go round to the other side, the river was the centre of the warehousing and transshipment activity. That all changed with the advent of steam and bigger ships. And in the mid-19th century, they started to develop port facilities away from the river, down further down the west coast. And that's, of course, where the centre of the container business is now, and as we'll see from the distance when we get around the other side.
And if you look out to their left, you see the extraordinary high-rise buildings, and you see the human aspect of it, I suppose, with the dwelling part of it. Is that reclaimed land as well?
Everything you see along the coastline here is the East Coast Park, which is one of the first big reclamation projects. In fact, it was done by the Housing Board. And all those high-rises that you see along the edge there, they're all on reclaimed land. And the original coastline ran behind that. So if you look at a map of Singapore as it was 50 years ago and a map of Singapore as it is now, you'll see quite a considerable difference. The big changes started in this area in the 60s, and the basic outline here was completed by about 1990, at which point they had to leave the land to settle before they could actually build major projects like Marina Bay Sands.
And so it's a sort of model, isn't it, really, of human intervention, but also completing something like the amazing amount of sort of engineering prowess, sort of project management skill, and decision to complete.
you can't look at the greening of Singapore in isolation. It was all part of an urban development process. It was part of a clean-up process because pollution was an enormous problem. In the olden days. It was right from the time when Raffles arrived in the early 19th century. They had terrible problems with muck and filth and smell in the river, and it was notorious for that. It remained so, really, up until the 60s and onwards. And a big clean-up started in the late 70s, and it was more or less completed by the late 80s. 1987 was when they had all kinds of events and ceremonials to mark the process.
Wow. Well, let's keep walking and have a look, because to sort of see the purposeful transformation of something in this bird's eye view is quite revealing in its own way, actually.
It is. It's quite astonishing to see such an entirely artificial environment, because the original primeval forests and primary forests in Singapore, they went in the 19th century, that's not a recent thing, they went to make way for plantations of Gambia, pepper, then rubber, coconuts, pineapples, that sort of thing. There was a lot of agriculture until the 50s or 60s. And a lot of people who were engaged in farming, they were rehoused in the new housing blocks, the new towns that started to be developed from the 70s onwards.
Right. So are there any wild places left in Singapore or not?
There's very little primary forest. There's some in the Bukit Timah Nature Reserve, which is certainly worth a visit, and there's a bit in the Botanic Gardens. But otherwise, pretty much all the greenery, which looks relatively natural, is in fact secondary forest, not primary forest.
So this has been an intervened upon environment, as it were, for really two centuries now.
Yes, a century and a half at least, yes, yeah. Certainly.
And as we walk around here, my gosh, you certainly see 21st century intervention, these extraordinary towers, which all, I suppose, represent the Singapore's modern
Singapore's modern economy, which is where the financial sector plays a huge part. And as you stand here looking towards the town, to the far left you can see some container facilities.
Yes.
And they go for miles down in that direction.
And that's the new port area, is it?
That's the new port area, but there are several new port areas.
Oh, this is this huge container. See, all of those sort of towers.
And because Singapore never stops, the plan is to redevelop a lot of that for residential purposes and move the port even further down.
On more reclaimed land?
There's a lot of reclamation down there. And again, one of the big early reclamation projects was Jurong Industrial Estate, far to the west, which involved combining several islands to provide facilities for petrochemicals, oil refineries, that sort of thing, to keep all that stuff well away from the centre of the town. But as we stand here, you see the container port to the left, then you see the new financial centre, which is all on reclaimed land.
Which is fairly formidable.
You see Clifford Pier. You see the little building there with the orange roof.
Ah, yes.
That was where you arrived in Singapore.
With the lovely
arches. That's where you arrived in Singapore if you came by tender from your steamer, which of course couldn't come in this far. It would anchor offshore and a small boat would carry you to Clifford Pier. And that was your first experience of Singapore. And along here was Collyer Quay, which was the equivalent of the Bund in Shanghai, where all the banks were. And you still have HSBC But Standard Chartered is
ANZ,
there.
Our own ANZ.
That's right. UBS, DBS. So it still is the banking centre, but it's moved somewhat onto the reclaimed.
I mean, it's pretty orthodox area. Sort of tall buildings. And I mean, they're attractive right. enough, I suppose, but my God, they're awesome.
They're not quite on the Hong Kong style, but you can see
City,
it's in the same.
Citibank, Western.
Exactly. The Fullerton Hotel is the old post office, which is one of the few remaining old buildings. And then you see the old Singapore River. And that is where...
That's the old Singapore River winding around.
That's where all the bumboats and the warehouses used to be. And all what is now rather trendy seafood restaurants and bars and so on, they were all warehouses.
So let's just go back a bit then. You've charted this amazing transformation, which, as you say, is... It's a very definite set of decisions that Lee Kuan Yew made, which is, we've got to understand in their entirety. What do you mean?
Well, I think he made the decision that Singapore had to be transformed into something that would distinguish it from its regional competitors. And part of that was to make the environment attractive as compared with competing cities, Hong Kong, Kuala Lumpur, Jakarta, and so on. And so initially, I think it's fair to say that the motivation was to simply make what would otherwise have been a concrete jungle more attractive. But this was implemented with a degree of professionalism that I think you'd have found hard to match anywhere else. And so at every level, when the Housing Board developed new towns, they designed in hierarchies of parks. Every new town has its parks. All the main highways have been developed with greenery beneath them. There are very often spaces between the carriageways to let sunlight down into the void below so you can grow stuff underneath. Wherever concrete could be mitigated by greenery, on the whole, I think they've done it. And the Parks Board operate within some pretty challenging constraints, among which a lack of land, population growth, the demands of planners and developers and so on. But they have shown an astonishing level of professionalism and attention to detail in creating this softened environment, highly developed, highly artificial, highly urbanized, but nevertheless softened by greenery everywhere in the island. It's completely consistent across the island. There are no areas really where they haven't managed to do their job.
Do we know where he got this from, this idea?
No, I think he was aware that other cities had parks. He was educated in Cambridge. He probably must have seen all the greenery in England at the time. I think it was just a sense that you had to make the place look nice to attract foreign investment, to attract foreign companies to invest in Singapore, because that was always part of the economic strategy, to bring expertise in. It wasn't to keep people out, it was to bring in investment. And the idea was to make the place as attractive as possible. Now, as time went on, that became much more sophisticated, and people started to worry about real conservation, biodiversity, and so on and so forth. But that, I don't think, was part of his initial motivation. His initial motivation was to present Singapore as somewhere that was different.
I suppose what I ask is that it suggests a man of Asian background, you know, of the Confucian values, analysing his own culture's strengths and weaknesses, analysing the culture he was educated in the West. He was deeply ambivalent about some strengths and weaknesses, and sort of marrying them and then finding a way to execute it.
Well, I think execution was key. I don't know how important conservation for its own sake ever was to him, but subsequent generations of Singaporeans have certainly started to take that much more seriously, and I think the government is clearly very aware of that. And so conservation, as we would understand it internationally, has become an increasingly important part of government thinking.
Yes, good news for conservationists in Singapore, as there has been some debate over creating gardens from forests, as it is the least forested part of Asia. That was Tim Auger speaking with us on the top of the Marina Bay Sands Hotel, which is somewhat out of space-like. The view is truly amazing, though. Tim's lived in Singapore for over 20 years, and he's been commissioned to write many books about the island, including Living in a Garden, The Greening of Singapore. It was published by the National Parks Board. And I must add that several people wrote to us to say that a lot of the inspiration for the sort of modern-looking Singapore had actually come from people who'd studied in Australia and been under the sort of mentorship of Australian architects. So quite an interesting link there.